Israelites will find them. Chapter 3. Burying the Dead. "They'll never find us," Phelan commented, upon observing the drunken greycoat stumbling out of the tavern. Asher pulled his hood lower to conceal his face, not wanting to take the chance. It had been his idea to keep to themselves and leave the greycoats be. Phelan hooked her arm under his, and the pair drew closer together as they walked the streets of Vangarth posing as a couple. The ranger slung the sack of food over his shoulder and continued to head towards the Greenleaf Inn. West Phelan was in ruins and the greycoats scattered, but Asher didn't fancy spending any more time in one of their cells, or the more likely outcome, that he would end up killing them. He still wasn't sure how he would react if he ever saw Ned Fenwick again, his personal torturer. There was a time when Asher wouldn't have considered anything but killing the arrogant knight. His current company were changing him in many ways, some more subtle than others. Phelan pressed against him within her dark cloak, having arranged her long black hair to cover her pointed ears. Asher felt uncomfortable with how much he enjoyed the elf's company. He had enjoyed the company of women before, but only for a night. Taking comfort or joy in anything tasted like ash in his mouth now. Elaith was dead. In keeping with greycoat tradition, a pyre had been built by the companions, and the young knight from Amiraska had been cremated on the bank of the Unmar a 10 day ago. Asher missed the greycoat's witty sense of humor and innocent naivety, but mostly he just missed how she looked at him. Elaith found the ranger to be fascinating and inspiring, never the killer the rest of the world saw. How many greycoats had died in the Battle of Westphalian? Elaith would not have been the youngest to die at the hands of the Arrakesh, though the young knight had been slain by a greater evil than the assassins. Aladir Yalathanil's smug face was burned into Asher's mind, not only by the many years he had spent being trained by the elf, but by the smirking expression as he told the ranger about the truth of his past, moments before the elf killed Elaith. Asher was still trying to get his head around the idea that he had been standing still for 1,000 years. For a millennium, he had been frozen as a boy in the archway of Elathia's old tunnels. Any family he thought might still be out there, living inside the wild moors, would be long dead. It was even possible that his entire clan had been wiped out in any number of skirmishes between the wild folk of the woods. More greycoats rounded the corner in front of the couple. Asher glanced at them for a second, but was sure to keep from making eye contact. He had been trained vigorously in the art of blending in during his years at Nightfall, the home of the Arrakesh. The ranger could move through any streets as if he were a ghost on the wind. Phelan's beauty, on the other hand, was not something that could be easily hidden. By any man's eye, the flawless complexion of an elf could not be ignored, and so the two greycoats paused to take her in. Asher held his breath and discreetly reached within his cloak for the small dagger that lay at the base of his back. It was the only weapon he had brought with him, or more to the point, it was the only weapon Phelan had allowed him to bring. The elf had rightly pointed out that Asher had been seen by all the greycoats upon their entry to Westphalian, and that a man walking around Vangarth with a short sword strapped to his back would gain attention. He had even left his quiver and compact bow behind, despite the fact that most of Vangarth's population wore both. It was a town of hunters, most skilled at navigating the Evermore. The ranger kept his head low and ushered Phelan along, turning the corner from which the greycoats had emerged. He wanted to get her out of sight before one of them tried their luck. Though they were the famous knights of the realm, whose lives surrounded that of honor and duty, he still didn't trust them. Especially now that their order was in disarray, and their leaders scattered to the wind or buried under Westphalian. Now they were simply skilled fighters, with no direction. The sun hadn't long set, and the cold night was quick to descend. Winter wasn't far off, and they knew about it. Soon the icy winds would travel south, off the slumbering mountains, and bring snow to the Evermore. The streets of Vangarth were still crowded, however, as the townsfolk prepared for the celebrations in honor of Ymira, the goddess of the harvest. For the people of Ilion, it was as if nothing had changed. Asher looked around as everyone got on with their lives, putting up bunting and planting flags or building shrines to Ymira. They lived less than 100 miles from Westphalian, where only a 10 day ago, the largest battle in any of their lives had been fought. The greatest knights of the realm, these people's self-proclaimed protectors, had fallen and their home destroyed. Not only that, but Alethiah, an ancient city that had stood for thousands of years, had been razed to the ground. Nobody cared. War hadn't been brought to their doors, and Vangarth hadn't been destroyed. No one knew that Elaith had been killed by an elf, or that there were even elves in Ilion. The royal families had kept that secret to themselves after the celebrations had been cancelled in Velia. Considering everything they had gone through over the last month, being in civilized Vangarth seemed very surreal to the ranger. Asher stole a glance over his shoulder to confirm that they weren't being followed. After cutting through the alleyway, the couple were back onto one of the main streets. The town was predominantly made of wood, being surrounded by the largest forest in Ilion. Vangarth was one of two towns that sat within the border of the forest and under the rule of Queen Isabella Harg. The queen ruled all of Thelgarn from her throne in the city of Lirion, deep in the heart of the Evermore and north of Vangarth. "I need to pick up some more Evernight," Phelan said as they approached the herbalist.
"More?"
Asher asked in his usual gruff voice.
"You bought some a week ago."
The ranger didn't want to go near the herbalist. The little shop sat next to the hunter's lodge, which had been recently converted to house all the wounded greycoats after the battle. The knights were always coming and going, visiting their injured comrades. "I need to make more elixir," Phelan explained. "You have no idea what it's like, living among so many humans with an elven nose." The elf wrinkled her button nose in disgust.
"Rayna doesn't seem to mind."
Asher couldn't hide his smile from Phelan, even under the cowl of his large hood. Phelan offered a scowl in return. The princess's mentor still wasn't approving of the relationship that continued to form between Nathaniel and Rayna. Asher was thankful that the greycoat had the elf to comfort him, however. After they left the swamps of Alethia, Nathaniel had been a broken man, blaming himself for Elaith's death. Asher waited outside the shop and sat on a nearby bench, next to an old man enjoying his pipe. Sitting on his own was an easy way to stand out. A couple of greycoats strolled by, but none took any notice of the hooded man. The ranger sighed and sat back, tired of never being able to relax. No man should still be fighting into his 50s. Even though he hadn't told his companions, Asher had turned 53 days past. He could never remember his actual birthday, but Nastanel Akit had proclaimed the day he found Asher outside Alethia to be it. Asher didn't like to think about the fact that he was technically well over 1,000 years old. The ranger sat there, feeling the cold breeze settle into his bones, while his muscles continued to ache from his fight with the Arrakesh and the dark elf at Elam Bovo. Asher was used to feeling the after-effects of a battle, but Adelam had been a new challenge, not to mention the punishment he experienced at Aladir's hands. The ranger looked at his right hand and noted the absence of his ring. How many times had Paldora's gem healed him? Now he was without its magic. Now he was just as vulnerable as everyone else. The neighing of a horse across the street broke his reverie. The large square door of the town's blacksmith blew open to reveal a rather frustrated horse, resisting the smith's attempts to fit new shoes. Asher's eyes went wide when he saw the horse's chestnut coating and twin braids along its mane.
"Hector!" "Son of a—"
The ranger shot up from the bench and stormed across the street and into the blacksmith's workshop. The horse tried to rear up in protest, but the smith's assistant held it down by the reins. Asher pushed the smith back and shot the assistant a threatening glare until he let go of the reins.
"What are ye about?"
the smith bellowed, brandishing the horseshoe as if it were a weapon. Though Asher appeared less threatening than usual without his assortment of blades and swords, he retained that look in his eye that gave even the most skilled of warriors pause.
"This is my horse."
Asher placed a hand on Hector's cheek and immediately calmed the animal.
"This here horse belongs to Mr. Biggins, the stablemaster."
The smith lowered the horseshoe and backed off a step. "He's had a load since that business down at Westphalian." Asher sighed again, as the smith gave such little care or credence to the battle and all the lives lost.
"And you don't look much like one of them greycoats,"
the smith added with confidence.
"Doesn't change the fact that he's mine,"
Asher countered.
"What's all this, then?"
an authoritative voice asked from behind the ranger. Asher cursed under his breath, sure that he had just given himself away to the greycoats.
"Do we have a problem here?"
The ranger turned around slowly and concealed his expression of relief at the sight of Vangarth's watch. Two soldiers dressed in silver chainmail with green and yellow hauberks were standing in the doorway.
each brandished a sword on their hip and wore silver helmets that revealed their faces. Dark green cloaks draped over their shoulders and collected mud at the bottom. The assassin in Asher had already assessed both men and decided where to strike to bring them down quickly and quietly. But that was not his way anymore. The Ranger had his companions to think of now. If he started a fight here, it would compromise the others and put them at risk of being exposed. They had to remain hidden for now. "He claims this here horse belongs to him," the smith exclaimed, his confidence now bolstered in the presence of the watch. "Do you have any papers to back up this claim?" the soldier asked, sounding almost bored with the complaint. Asher clenched his jaw in the sight of defeat. "No." "Then best be on your way." The soldier stepped aside and gestured for Asher to leave. The ranger patted Hector one last time and left the blacksmith with a warning look. It would be the same look that gave the man nightmares that night. Phelan met him in the street with a curious glance at the soldiers behind him. The elf quickly took his arm again, and the couple disappeared into the lanes. "What was that about?" Phelan asked. "I found Hector," Asher replied, with no lack of frustration in his tone. "You nearly got into a fight and exposed us all over a horse?" The elf sounded bemused. "My horse," Asher replied a little too loud, gaining the attention of a young man walking by. Phelan gave him her usual condescending look and steered them into the Greenleaf Inn. The pub that dominated the lower level was packed as usual, but no greycoats in sight. They had picked this particular inn because of how far away it was from the converted hunter's lodge and surrounding inns. Asher and Phelan moved through the crowd with ease, both experts in predicting body language. The ranger retrieved his key, but Phelan interrupted him before he could press it into the lock. "He's in my room," the elf said with displeasure. Asher smiled, putting away his key, and turned to follow Phelan into the room she shared with Rayna. Her elven ears proved true, as they entered and found the princess and the greycoat sitting on a single bed together. Nathaniel made to stand up at seeing Phelan, but Asher noticed Rayna's delicate, yet incredibly strong hands pull at the knight's arm and keep him in place. The ranger paused, catching sight of the exquisite blade crafted from pure magic sitting in the corner. Aladir's short sword was propped against the corner, along with Adelim's devastating bow. Its ornate, white handle curved slightly at the bottom, where a crystal the size of a thumb sat fused into the hilt. The steel blade was hourglass-shaped, just as his own was, and both were lined in ancient runes. Asher could only see the blade spinning end over end until it found Aleth's heart. "A productive trip?" Rayna asked, looking from Phelan to Asher, who was thankful for the distraction. "We bought some food, I acquired some more Evernight root, and Asher nearly got into a fight with the town watch over a horse." Phelan gave him another condescending look. "You found Hector?" Nathaniel asked with forced enthusiasm. The knight was trying for the benefit of the group, but it was clear that he was still depressed. "He's still in Vankoth?" "Taken in by some stable master," Asher explained irritatedly. "I take it you already have plans to reacquire the horse?" Rayna asked coyly. "Leave it to me." Asher's definitive tone ended the conversation, and he dropped the sack of food onto the round table. The group ate in relative silence, making small talk through mouthfuls of cold meat and bread. Asher couldn't quite believe how much meat the elves could eat. He was sure they put away more than a clan of trolls. "I overheard some disturbing news in the tavern today," Nathaniel said between mouthfuls. "Word has been sent from Lord Marshal Horvath. Apparently he survived, and Ned Fenwick with him." Asher felt the echo of a hot poker burning his skin. "They're in Velia," Nathaniel continued. "Lord Macaris has offered a permanent refuge for all greycoats in Darkwell." They didn't trust the King of Orith. When Rayna and the others had arrived in Velia, it had been a complement of Macaris's men that attacked them alongside Rhoda Sarn. There was no evidence that Macaris was aware of his men's deception, and certainly no link between him and Aladir. But still, the king's generous offer to the greycoats was not to be trusted. "Will you go with them?" Asher asked, already sure of the answer. Nathaniel looked from him to Rayna, before concentrating on his food again. "I've made my choice." The ranger was happy to hear it, if only for Nathaniel's sake. The greycoats never accepted him simply because of who his father was. Tobin Galfrey had been one of the greatest greycoats in history, but his public siring of Nathaniel tainted his reputation and humiliated the order. Nathaniel was nothing but a reminder of that to the other knights. Asher wanted his friend to be free of it. The concept of friendship wasn't completely new to the old assassin, but he was coming to enjoy the bond that grew between them. Elaith's death, however, was a reminder of how much it could hurt to let someone else into his life. For 14 years, Asher had roamed Ilion as a free man, but he considered very few to be what others would call friends. It could not be denied, however, that the ranger now thought of Nathaniel as a friend, as well as Rayna and even Phelan, though the older elf could still be hard to read. Asher just nodded his head in response to Nathaniel. The ranger had never been one for words, and hoped that his friend knew from the silent reply how glad he was. Later that night, after leaving the elf's room, Asher didn't stop at the door to his room, but gestured for Nathaniel to follow him outside. Curious, the knight followed him, asking all the while where they were going. Asher walked through the near-empty streets until they reached the edge of the town. The two paused in the shadows as a pair from the watch walked by on patrol. The ranger didn't want them to be seen leaving the town at night, a suspicious sight in itself. The two continued through the trees of the Evermore until the lights of Vangarth were a dim glow in the background. "What are we doing here, Asher?" Nathaniel asked, frustrated. "We're burying her," the ranger replied solemnly. Nathaniel looked confused. "Elaith, we built a... the necklace." Asher gestured to Nathaniel's right pocket with his chin. "I saw you take it." Nathaniel didn't even try to hide it. He reached into the pocket and retrieved a simple chain with a square piece of carved wood attached to it. The script was hard to see in the moonlight, but Asher knew it was written in Kalanti, the language of the arid lands and Elaith's birthplace. "I didn't even know she had it," Nathaniel explained. "Greycoats don't have much in the way of possessions, especially from wherever they came from. We're told to leave it all behind and embrace the order." Nathaniel laughed with little mirth. "I don't even know what it says, but it was the only thing on her that was hers." "I don't remember any of the traditions of the Outlanders," Asher began, "but Nasta taught me some of the ways of his people." Nasta Nal-Akit, the former father of Nightfall and mentor to Asher, had treated the ranger like a son during his time as an assassin. That was until Aladir killed him and dropped him into the pit, deep in the heart of Nightfall. In truth, Asher wasn't sure if he would have stopped the elf had he been there. "He came from Havona, in the north of the Arid Lands," Asher continued. "It's not Amaraska, but their cultures are similar." Asher knelt down in front of Nathaniel and used his hand to dig a small hole in the soft, muddy ground. "They bury their dead, but then they wait for the new moon until they bury their grief. They take something that belonged to the dead, and they bury it, giving over their grief in the process. You need to leave it here." Nathaniel looked down at the small hole and considered the necklace. "I failed her." "She was a greycoat," Asher quickly replied. "Elaith died in battle, a warrior. I would rather she had died of old age. That's not how people like us meet our end." Asher stepped away from Nathaniel, giving him the space to consider the southern tradition. "Bury your grief." The ranger left Nathaniel under the dark canopy of the Evermore. It was some time before he returned to their room at the Greenleaf Inn, except Asher kept his eyes closed and pretended to remain asleep, happy that his friend had perhaps found some peace. Of course, Asher had no intention of burying his grief or searching for peace. Instead, he was going to find Aladir Yalathanal and give the elf his blade back. When the sun rose again, the four companions came back together to enjoy breakfast, and enjoy it they did. Nathaniel's renewed spirit infected them all, lifting the dark cloud that had followed them from Elathia. The knight wasn't completely back to his normal self, but his smile was at least genuine. Asher allowed himself to relax for what felt like the first time in many years, and imparted on the group a few of his funnier tales from life on the road. They shared a laugh, and the ranger even achieved a smile from Phelan, who never relaxed. "So what do we do now?" Rayna finally asked in the inevitable lull. "What can we do?" Phelan replied, with a hopeless tone. "Valinus has been free for 40 years. We have to assume he's been hiding at Caliban, The legends say he built the fortress around the pools of Nios. Without the gem, he must have been too weak after thousands of years in the Amber Spell, otherwise he would have been seen before now. But with the gem, he could be anywhere now. Imagine what plans he has already in place with 4 decades of planning. You all heard Aladir. He doesn't have an army, so he pits man against elf to do the work for him. He must have had the gem for a 10-day now. If he's as powerful as you say, why haven't we already heard from him? Nathaniel asked, with a mouthful of apple. Why hasn't he destroyed Velia, or Lirion, or Greystone? Aladir brought down Elithia with the gem. Shouldn't Valinus be leveling all of Ilion by now? He doesn't need to, Rayna said. He's already steered the course of the elven army. Valinus has but to stand back and watch. He doesn't need to, or he can't. Asher emphasized the difference. Phelan's eyes lit up, as if understanding his way of thinking. Yes. He only has a shard of the gem. Phelan stood up from the table and began to pace. It's possible he's still stuck in Caliban, or wherever he's been hiding all these years. Nathaniel put his apple down with a look of disbelief. So, are we going after Valinus? No. Phelan stopped pacing. Even if the shard of Peldora's gem doesn't restore him to strength, Valinus is still a powerful foe with powerful allies. Wherever he is, you can be certain he's surrounded by those who would kill to keep him safe. We would need an army to march on Caliban, if that's where he is, and no one knows for sure where it is. There are 5 armies in Ilion, not counting Dragorn, Asher said. Should we ask to borrow one? The ranger's attempt to add some levity was unsuccessful. Rayna said, Or perhaps we should simply give another army a singular purpose. The princess looked to Phelan with a glimmer of hope. No, Phelan said without consideration. There is nothing that will stop your father from waging war with mankind. Knowing that Valinus is free will only increase his ferocity, and when he discovers that you have already been in danger, he will invade all the sooner, I am sure. He won't wait for the dragons of Mount Garganathan to grow, and that's if Galanor even freed Meliath from Corcanath. Then we need more information. Rhaenyra looked to the chest at the base of Phelan's bed. Its infinite depths contained most of their supplies, though Asher was unsure as to what Rayna was hinting at. Phelan sighed, and her shoulders sagged, as if she had come to some miserable conclusion. The elf sat on the end of her bed and looked at the chest with unease. "What are you talking about?" Nathaniel asked for the two of them. "We have a diviner," Rayna explained. "It allows us to communicate with other people who have diviners, but our one is part of a closed set. We can talk only to Galanor or my father." The princess didn't appear all that happy about the last part. "I've seen these diviners before," Asher commented, with a hint of distrust. "Anyone can listen in if they have one." "Not these ones," Phelan finally spoke. "The 3 orbs were enchanted by our elders for many moons to ensure their security. It was to be our way of coordinating the invasion and supplying King Elim with information." "Have you used it yet?" Nathaniel looked at the closed chest with interest. "Not yet," Rayna said. "Morrigan was the last to speak with either Galanor, though his diviner wouldn't work on Corcanath." Asher thought about the elven ambassador, killed in his room in Velia. The ranger didn't know much about the elf, except that he was supposed to be an expert in magic. And yet his room was testament to the battle of spells that had taken place. It continued to trouble Asher that they still didn't know who had killed the elf, but he could only imagine it to be one of the Hand, Valinus's generals. "One way or another, you're going to have to speak with him," Asher said. "We need to know what kind of time we have before the invasion. And we need to know if we should expect dragons," Nathaniel added with wide eyes. Phelan looked at them all before turning to the chest, her mind made up for her. It was a strange thought to Asher that Phelan was about to speak with the same Elim he had met 1,000 years ago in the library of Alethia. Their previous, if tenuous, link was a potential complication yet to be seen by the ranger. Chapter 4 The Lord of Elves. Despite the chilling breeze, the city of Elandril was encompassed in glorious sunshine. The entire valley sparkled amidst the 12 waterfalls that surrounded the elven city, pouring water from the river Nyla into the lakes that surrounded the land. The tall trees of the Amara dotted the valley, until the great forest engulfed the horizon for as far as the eye could see, even an elven eye. King Elimsivari looked out over the tops of those trees, as if he could see Ilion's shores 1,000 miles away. The world of man was an ocean away, yet with every day the elves grew closer to reaching its borders. Ilion would be theirs again. Elim rested his hands against the balcony railing and took the city in. What a beauty their home was. Over the course of 1,000 years, the elves had erected spires and towers of unimaginable height, as well as homes both humble and grand. Their numbers had swelled over the centuries, no easy task when female elves could only bear children once every 100 years, and provided Elandril with an incredible population. Every grown elf more than capable of wielding a sword or manipulating magic. No longer were they the peaceful folk of the wood, but a race to be reckoned with. It wouldn't matter how big the human armies were. For every elf, they would need 20 men to compete. The King of Elves looked down from his balcony, set into the tallest tower in the palace, and nestled against the high valley wall. His warriors lined up in rows in the great courtyard below, training under the High Guardian, Varro Grovale. Of all of his advisers, Elim trusted Varro's word without question. The elf had achieved the highest rank within their army, and his sons and daughters were all warriors born. Varro had no interest in matching his children with the highborn families, or even the royals themselves. He would fight for Elim and the elven race until his life was claimed, or Ilion was theirs. That thought led the king to dwell on Galanor, of House Reverie. The elf was the best sword fighter in all of Elandril, and easily the best choice to lead the mission to Gor'kanoth. But he had failed to make contact via his diviner for several weeks. He should have returned with Meliath the Voiceless by now. Elim had personally taken the time to instruct Galanor on how to speak with the dragon and control his emotions. Though the king wasn't a dragorn, Elim's sister, Nalana, had been one of the chosen for many centuries. Before her death, she had taught him about the ways of the dragons in hopes that one day he too might become a dragorn. Of course, had he been born with that gift, as his sister had, he would never have chosen to live among them on their mysterious islands. Elimsivari was born to rule. "My lord," the melodic voice of Naywin called to him from the doorway. Elim turned to look upon his servant. The young elf presented the king with a wooden chest, carried in both hands. He had requested it earlier that morning, from his private vault. Though now it was in front of him, Elim was hesitant to open it. The rectangular box was engraved with ancient glyphs and elven symbols, an intricate spell that would keep the chest shut to all but him. His fingers ran over the polished wood, working through the hieroglyphs with great care. It had been centuries since he had looked inside. As always, the chest had him thinking of Nalana, his sister. Her words had sunk into the very bones of his wife, Adelandra. How many days of late had he been frozen in place, fearful for the love of his very long life? Adelandra was in lands unknown to the south of Ada, seeking the last of the old dragons. A fool's errand, he thought. Their future lay dormant inside Mount Garganifan, with the unborn dragons. Their last conversation had been an argument, and a great one at that, regarding her departure to the south. Before he could dwell on such depressing thoughts, Naywin shifted her body, and the breeze carried her perfume towards him. It reminded him of Rhaena, his daughter. Another great love he had pushed away in pursuit of justice for his people. She too was in lands that carried great peril, though her mission was more important than most. "My lord?" Naywin asked with concern. How long had he been standing there, staring at the chest? He hated the box and its wretched contents, always taking over his emotions and dredging up memories. Before Elim could open the chest, his keen ears heard footsteps approaching the door to his chamber. Thankful for the disturbance, the king bade Naywin to take the chest away as he adjusted his long robe and walked back into his room. "Enter." "My lord." A member of his personal guard strode into the room, clad in white armor, helmet, and blue cloak. Elim had always favored the style since the Dark War, and ensured the continuation of the tradition. "Forgive the intrusion, but the diviner has been activated." Ellen nodded curtly, containing any emotion in front of one of his warriors. "Gather the council, and have High Guardian Varro attend." The guard turned on his heel and left immediately to see to his lord's command. Ellen left soon after, looking back only to see Naywin leave with the chest. The circular chamber that housed the diviner had been enchanted with every spell imaginable to keep the room's secrets. No one could scry him from miles away, or even listen in from the other side of the door. The black orb sat atop an ornate pedestal, emitting a high-pitched hum. Ellen composed himself before placing his hand over the diviner, unsure as to who he would be speaking with. The circular chamber melted away, along with any semblance of reality. The king was surrounded by darkness and what felt like an encompassing tornado. Sat cross-legged in front of him was a ghostly image of Phelan Haldor, his daughter's mentor. "Where is Morrigan?" Elim asked, all too aware that the diviner had been given to him and not to Phelan. Phelan hesitated. "Morrigan is dead, my lord." At just over 1,000 years old, Elim was an expert at guarding his reactions to any situation. As the king, his reactions alone could guide events in ways he didn't intend, and so he had learned long ago that keeping his composure was a fine way of keeping control. "And Rayna?" Before they went any further, he had to know. "She is alive and here with me. We're safe for now," Phelan explained. Ellen clenched his jaw to conceal his sigh of relief. The thought of Rayna being harmed had opened a pit in his stomach that the king didn't think could be opened. "How was he killed?" Ellen couldn't believe that Morrigan Morgo had died in any accident. "We don't know who killed him, my lord. Whoever they were, they're in league with the Arrakesh, the Guild of Assassins here in Ilion." Even across the shadowy realm, Phelan struggled to maintain eye contact with him. "I know of the assassins, humans all." Ellen had been spying on the humans for years prior to enacting his plan and knew a great many secrets. "How did one come to defeat Morrigan?" "We now know that they are being controlled by none other than Aladir Yalathanil, the head of the Hand." Now that he didn't know. Ellen looked away from the ethereal form of Phelan in an effort to hide the shock and fear slowly building in his gut. Aladir's body had never been identified among the dead after the Battle of Elathia. The elf deserved a truly horrible death for the terror and pain he had inflicted during those dark days. The fear that he, or any of the Hand, had survived, had always lived inside Ellim. "You have proof of this?" he probed, still unwilling to believe. "I fought him myself, in the Hall of Life." Phelan continued to shock the king. "You have been to Elithia?" He couldn't help the anger creeping into his voice. "You were meant to stay in Velia and gather information, to assist Galanor in entering Korkanath. If the opportunity arose, you were to travel between human kingdoms and inform us of their strengths and weaknesses. You are not meant to take my daughter to that graveyard." "There's more, my lord." Phelan's mannerisms were so akin to Adelandra's that Ellen couldn't help but think of his wife and the concerns she would have for Rayna. "You're going to tell me everything, Phelan, from the beginning." Later than he had intended, Ellen attended the council meeting he had summoned. The heads of the 7 highborn families were present, along with the 4 elders and the High Guardian Varro. The luxurious chamber was filled with glowing orbs that floated around the room, though their light was barely needed, with the midday sun flooding the room from the open balcony. Servants surrounded the circular table, each from one of the highborn families. They all stood from their high-backed chairs, out of respect for the king. Ellen walked up to his own place at the table. His announcement was simple. "Valinus has been freed." Along with the faces of every elf present, the king dropped into his chair, all composure forgotten. "How can this be?" Varro asked. The High Guardian's long blonde hair was tied up into a knot atop his head, so that not a single hair touched his pristine white armor. "It seems Paldora's gem never left Elathia," Elim explained. Images of his sister Nalana flashed before his eyes, along with her blood on his hands. "My sister gave the gem to a boy, an outlander." The story was well known, but Ellen was reliving accounts more for himself than anyone else. She thought he had a better chance of escaping the city unseen and the gem with him. She was wrong. Elim rested his hands on the table and unclenched them. The power of the gem fractured the amber spell from within Elithiah's walls. It took 1,000 years, but it finally freed him, along with the outlander. The king could hardly believe his own words. The pathetic-looking boy he had met in Elithiah's library so long ago, longer than some of these elves had been alive, was still walking around Ilion, and now a warrior of capable skill, according to Phelan. That brought him to the next revelation. Not only is Valinis free, but the Hand has survived, or at least two of them have. Phelan Haldor claims to have seen Thallan Tessarion, and has even fought Aladir Yalathanil. Perhaps the wildest claim of all is that my daughter, Princess Rhaena, has slain Adelim Bovo. Samandril and Nakir have yet to make themselves known. The elves sat in silence, struggling to take in such crushing news. It had been this council that had planned every detail of Ilion's invasion. These 13 elves had sat and planned the genocide of a race and the elevation of their own, along with finally defeating Valinis. Now it seemed their greatest foe was still a step ahead of them. For the last millennium, Aladir has been leading the notorious Arrakesh. He's been building this army in secret and teaching them our ways. They fight as we do, with some magical assistance. Their numbers are unknown, but Aladir has pitted them against Phelan and my daughter, destroying the Greycoats in the process. The legacy of Tiberius Grey deserved such an end. Dragon slayers, Varro exclaimed, with his strong fist landing on the table. What of Morrigan, my lord? Petrona Morgo, the head of her house, and the aunt of Morrigan, asked with unease. Elim was truly sorry that his family had to hear of his death this way. He would rather have conveyed the news in private. Though Morrigan's mother and father had been sympathizers of Valinis, and executed after the Battle of Elithiah, the surviving Morgos had done everything in their power to make things right. I'm afraid to say he was killed in Velia. His attacker is unknown, but believed to be one of the Hand. My deepest sympathies, Petrona. Elim bowed his head. Morrigan was the first casualty in a war that had yet to be declared, and wouldn't likely be the last. He died for the princess, Petrona said without pause, always ready to seize the moment. And the Morgos will have the gratitude of House Savari for all time, Elim replied, with the only words Petrona wanted to hear. Forgive me. Tygon, the oldest and perhaps wisest of the four elders, looked to Petrona apologetically. But how long has Valinis been free of the Amber Spell? Some 40 years, Elim said. But the worst news is yet to come. The king could barely bring himself to speak the words. Valinis has Paldora's gem. The table erupted into chaos, as every member of the council, the elders included, broke into arguments about past errors and future plans. Through it all, Elim could see the fear that drove them. It had always been Valinis's greatest weapon of all. He has but a shard of the gem, Elim went on, though it is unknown how this will affect his control of the magic that corrupts him. Where is the rest of it? Tygon asked desperately, his youthful features twisted in dread. Lost for now. Through some twist of fate, the outlander has found his way, yet again, into the middle of our war. The boy, Varro's sharp eyes focused on the king incredulously. A man now, freed at the same time as Valinis, apparently. He was raised by the same assassins that Aladir controls. Elim could hardly believe Phelan's tale, especially the level of involvement from Asher. How could one man be so woven into their lives, the lives of immortals? Is this outlander allied with Valinis? Petrona asked. I doubt it, Elim replied. He must have had the gem for some time, and yet Valinis only recently gained possession. It matters not. Elim waved his hand to dismiss the topic. The man is insignificant. What matters is what we do next. We cannot invade without the dragons. Gadivar Reveri sat forward in his chair. House Reveri was the newest addition to the council, having only been given a seat 30 years ago. Your son is yet to deliver us one, Varro matched Gadivar's posture with a harder stare. Galanor should have returned days ago, with or without Meliath. We should consider his mission a failure and assume he and his companions are dead. We need to invade now, before Valinis has any more time to gather his forces or before he has another attempt to kill Princess Reyna. Gadivar sat back in his chair with a sullen expression, except Elim knew it wasn't over the potential death of his son, but rather the way his failure would taint their house name.
"How do we know Valinus isn't controlling the armies of men?" Arryn of House Caden asked.
"If the Hand has survived all these years, they could easily be manipulating the weak-willed kingdoms of man. We need more information before we launch our attack prematurely."
"We should attack now, I say," Elder Illithor Athatar offered.
The council looked to Elim for guidance.
"We must increase our efforts constructing the fleet immediately."
The king looked to Thero of House Valaniae.
"We are yet to harness all the material, my lord."
Thero looked to others on the council for support. "We thought we would have decades before..." Elim held up his hand to silence the elf.
"We must assume Mount Garganafan will remain closed to us, and the dragon eggs with it."
Elim could feel his plans unraveling. Without Maliath, he could see no way of opening the dragon wall and retrieving the eggs hidden within. He had planned on raising the dragons over a period of years, while the fleet was constructed, and his army fully prepared to go to war against the possible six armies. All the while, Valinus was supposed to be trapped inside Alethia. Now his daughter was being actively hunted down, Galanor hadn't been heard from, Valinus was free of his tomb, and Adalandra was still missing.
"Thero, you will have the assistance of all to construct the fleet. All will help."
The elders looked to protest, but Elim silenced them with a look.
"From this moment we are on a war footing. There will be no more talks with King Rengar and the human kingdoms. We take Ilion now."
With that, the king rose from his chair and turned to leave, ending the council meeting. Elim waited for an hour to pass before having word sent to Varro and Tygarn to return to the council room. The king waited for them on the wide balcony, lost in thought.
"You summoned us, my lord."
Varro appeared behind him with Tygarn by his side.
Reading his king's expression, the High Guardian went on to add, "We were discreet. No one knows we are here."
"Phelan had more to say," Elim explained at once. "Aladir's wicked tongue has worked against him. He has boasted that Valinus intends to use our war against the humans to weaken us before he strikes."
"With what army?" Varro asked.
"The Arrakesh are too small to pose any real threat against an army, especially an elven one. I have no doubt that Valinus has more going on than we can see. 40 years is a long time to make plans. My immediate concern is that he will find Reyna and use her against me."
Elim put aside thoughts of his daughter's potential harm and focused. "A small band can pass through the land unseen and get into places no army could. Tygarn, you are to leave at once for Ilion and find the princess. Keep her safe until we arrive in force."
"My lord."
Tygarn bowed, his obedience unquestioning. "Varro, you are to provide Tygarn with a small group to accompany him." The king turned back to the elder. "Do not concern yourself with hiding your heritage. Your reason for being in their lands is warranted, and it may grant you access where it would otherwise have been rejected."
"Why the secrecy, my lord?"
Tygarn asked, always perceptive of his king's decisions.
"Trust, Tygarn. Both you and Varro have my trust. But I learned today that Valinus broke free from Alethia 40 years ago. And exactly 40 years ago, members of that council came to me and persuaded me to invade Ilion."
Chapter 5. The Remnants of Hope.
Nathaniel watched as his brothers and sisters said their farewells to the people of Vangarth. Carts and horses had been supplied to transport the wounded, along with healing elixirs and potions to see them through, until they reached Darkwell, in the east of Orith. The town's governor embraced forearms with a greycoat Nathaniel recognized as Elijah Bennett, a good knight by his recollection. It appeared that Elijah was now leading the ragtag group in the absence of Fennec or Horvath.
"Last chance," Reyna said, eyeing Nathaniel with a coy smile.
Nathaniel returned the smile, aware that the princess already knew of his intentions to stay with her and the others. He couldn't deny that there was still a part of him that wanted to go with them, but he had chosen to forsake his duty in favor of a higher cause. His oath to the Order had died with Elaith. At least with Reyna and the others, he could make a real difference in Ilion.
possibly even helped to avoid a war. There was also the matter of his feelings towards Rayna to consider. Let them go their way, and I'll go mine. Nathaniel turned away from the departing crowd of knights and wandered back towards the Greenleaf Inn. In the weeks since the Battle of Westphalian, Nathaniel's usually shaved hair had grown somewhat, though not enough to conceal his identity. He was careful to keep his hood up and his face low, as Rayna did with her long blonde hair flowing out over her chest. The knight was unaccustomed to his new attire, and didn't care for loose-fitting clothes and a cloak. He longed for the comfort of his thick coat, and missed the authority it granted him. Nathaniel especially missed carrying his sword and bow. Asher had warned him about keeping the sword in particular, due to the greycoat sigil etched into the end of the hilt. What did feel good, however, was the warm elven hand clasped in his own. They walked hand in hand back to the inn, a real couple who caught no one's attention. This was a life he could get used to. That thought turned sour when he considered what a life that would really be. In 10, maybe 15 years, there would be a notable difference in his human appearance. Rayna looked to be in her early 20s, and would do forever. But he would grow old, and die before she reached her first century of life. She would remain strong when he would grow weak, healthy when he would become sick. What life would that be, for either of them? Eventually, he would hold Rayna back with his increasing age, and cause nothing but grief and sorrow for her, and he would have to live with knowing that she could be doing so much more instead of caring for him. Nathaniel squeezed her hand a little tighter for a moment, appreciating the moment and savoring the feeling of youth. Leaving her now would be the easiest way to prevent so much grief in the future, but leaving her just didn't seem possible. When they finally returned to the Greenleaf Inn, it became apparent that a heated discussion was taking place inside Rayna's room. It wasn't entirely unusual to hear Phelan disagreeing with Asher, but this time it sounded the reverse. "It might be the only way," Phelan was saying, exasperated. Nathaniel and Rayna walked into the room and observed the man and elf standing by the window, brows furrowed. "It would be suicide, trust me," Asher replied sternly before turning away. The ranger appeared more concerned than angry. "Did you get it out of your system?" He directed his question to Nathaniel with the same tone he had been using to argue with Phelan. It quickly became apparent, however, that he regretted his harsh tone and choice of words. Nathaniel was learning to read Asher's expressions and body language very well. "The greycoats have left for Darkwell," the knight replied, using his expression alone to convey his acceptance of Asher's unspoken apology. "And what are you two discussing so passionately?" Rayna asked, though Nathaniel caught sight of the coy smile she offered to Phelan. Phelan looked to Asher, and the two took a breath, as if for the first time. The ranger collapsed into one of the tattered yet comfy chairs in the corner, while Phelan bit her lip, carefully considering her words. "We have to stop the invasion," the older elf stated flatly. Nathaniel took his cloak off and walked into the middle of the room. It had only been a few hours since Phelan had spoken to Elim Savari, the Lord of the Elves, and told him of recent events. Even though they couldn't see or hear the conversation between them, it was clear how it had gone when Phelan's consciousness returned. The king wasn't happy. His attitude towards Phelan had been one of the reasons that Rayna chose to go out with Nathaniel to see the Greycoats leave. The elven princess couldn't stand anything to do with her father and had needed the fresh air. Of course, Phelan's conversation with the king led the group to discussing what they should do next. Phelan was convinced that the invasion would come sooner, but no one knew what had happened to Galinor, or the outcome of his mission to steal Meliath the Voiceless. If an attack had been made on Corcanoth, the news hadn't reached any of the towns in Ilion yet. "I told you not to tell him that Valinus was free," Rayna said for the third time that day. "It will only give us less time." "I agree," Phelan quickly replied. "But the truth is, if Valinus is manipulating events, our people might be the only ones who can stop him." "At the expense of everyone living in Ilion," Nathaniel added. "The elven army won't come all this way and stop at killing Valinus. They'll invade. That's why..." Phelan looked to Asher, her frustration rising again. Nathaniel was getting used to the heightened levels of emotions that elves displayed. They reacted to everything with more zeal than humans, even sad emotions.
Rena's urges didn't take so much getting used to as they did energy.
"What is it?"
the princess asked, looking at them both.
"What were you discussing?"
"If we can kill Valinus, we might still be able to avert war." Phelan had a hint of hope in her eyes.
"It's suicide."
Asha remained seated, staring at Aladir's short sword in the corner of the room.
"What's he talking about?"
Rena asked, becoming frustrated.
"Valinus has a shard of Paldora's gem," Phelan explained. "If we can get the rest of it, we might have enough power to destroy him.
But you said you threw it in the Aedean."
Nathaniel walked between Asher and the short sword, focusing on the ranger's attention.
"He was lying," Phelan stated confidently.
The news appeared to excite Rena, who flew across the room until the table stopped her from pouncing on Asher.
"Where is it?"
the princess demanded, with half a smile on her face. Asher looked up slowly.
"Beyond all of our reach."
"Asher," Nathaniel said softly, "this might be the only advantage we have over Valinus. Who knows what plans he's already made? Whether the elves come or not, it might be too late to stop him if we don't act now."
"You're all insane if you think that the four of us can stop the most powerful elf who ever lived."
Asher stood up from the table and made for the window.
"The four of us beat Adelim," Phelan offered.
"Five," Nathaniel added. For the rest of his days, he would make certain that the world remembered Elaith Nevander.
"You're not talking about challenging one of the Hand," Asher continued. "You're talking about fighting the other four, and Valinus, and every Arrakesh, and who knows what else."
Rayna circled around the ranger and looked at him with her brilliant emerald eyes.
"I know you're not afraid. So what's holding you back?"
Asher hesitated.
"Everything in me, everything I know tells me to blend in, be a face in the crowd, disappear. What you're talking about is going to put us out there for all of Ilion to see. There will be no coming back from this. We're going to have to fight and fight and fight until they're all dead, or we are."
"If it's fame you're worried about, then it's a little too late,"
Nathaniel replied with a smirk. As if fighting Rhodosaren in the halls of the Velian Palace weren't talked about enough, "your efforts at Westphalian will have you known across the land. And before all that, you were already infamous for saving Queen Isabella so many years ago." Nathaniel paused to ensure he had the ranger's full attention.
"The assassin is dead, and the ranger has risen."
Asher didn't look convinced.
"What will the ranger do next?"
Rayna added in her melodic tones.
Asher took a slow breath and met all of their eyes. "I threw it in the pit."
Nathaniel's expression of confusion was shared with Rayna and Phelan. During his time as a Greycoat, he had been to a lot of places and seen a lot of things that most men would run away from, but he had never heard of the pit.
"When your training is complete, there's one final test that every student must pass to become an Arrakesh. The pit is located deep in the heart of Nightfall. It was built centuries ago, probably under the orders of Aladir. Every student has to go into the pit and find a way out the other side. It's pitch black down there, a place where sunlight has never touched. A true test to ensure your bond with the Night's Eye Elixir is everlasting. There are monsters on the Nightfall that have never been seen before, nightmares that cannot be described. It's one of the reasons why the Arrakesh are so few. Only a handful of those who descend into the pit find a way back out."
"And you dropped Paldora's gem in there?"
Phelan asked in despair.
"I knew it was magic and powerful." Asher leant against the window ledge. "I was younger back then, more competitive. I didn't want any of the others to find it and use it, and the gem had already gained the attention of a few of the others. I cut a shard off, crafted the ring, and threw the rest away."
The group stood in silence for a moment, digesting the ranger's words.
"So, we're going to Nightfall."
Nathaniel just had to say it out loud to believe it.
"I told you. Suicide," Asher replied dryly.
"Where is it?" Nathaniel asked. For the first time in his life, he didn't really want to know. As a Greycoat, he had been driven to locate the ancient school for assassins, but now, after hearing Asher's description of the pit, he wasn't so sure he wanted to find it.
"The only place further south is Scylla's Gate,"
Asher said.
"The arid lands," Rayna exclaimed. "I've never seen a desert."
"Nor do you want to," Asher continued. "The only creatures that thrive there are predators, the people included. The desert makes you hard,
If we're actually going to travel there, we'll need supplies. Lots of supplies. We don't want to be stopping in Tregaron on the border. We need to head straight for Carath, the capital, and head east from there.
That could be a problem. Phelan dropped a small sack of coins on the table.
That's all that's left.
We could stay in Vangarth for a while, Nathaniel suggested. I'm sure there's work for a group of our skill set.
That would take too long, Phelan quickly replied. A journey that far south will take many days. We need to leave soon.
We won't last long if we leave in haste and without supplies.
Rena came to stand beside Nathaniel, as she often did.
Asher cleared his throat.
I know a place where we can get coin and supplies.
All eyes fell on the ranger, who would always have an edge of mystery to him, it seemed.
Stowholt has one of their banks in Lirion, and I have friends there that can meet our needs.
A bank? Rena asked.
Friends?
Nathaniel asked a little too skeptically.
Asher responded with a knowing smile, as if he too knew that the likelihood of him having other friends was slim and hard to believe.
I have an account within Stowhold. It was part of my deal with King Rengar for escorting you to Velia. We can take enough coin to buy our supplies and find an escort through the moonlit plains.
He gave you an account at Stowhold?
Nathaniel knew well of the prestigious bank and the privileged members that held accounts therein. Only the request from a king could have gotten Asher's name on the ledger.
How much did he give you?
No limits, Asher replied with a wide smile.
Nathaniel whistled. He really wanted you at his party.
The knight looked to Rayna, who still appeared confused at the idea of a bank.
King Rengar considers himself a good judge of character, Asher continued. He thinks of me as a simple man with simple needs. His children probably spend more in a week than I plan on spending in a lifetime. Though something tells me he'll have people watching the account to ensure my tastes remain cheap.
Why must we pay for an escort through the moonlit plains? Phelan asked.
Surely we four can handle a few wild centaurs.
Only fools travel through those plains in numbers this small, Asher explained.
Best we pay for escorts or offer to be escorts. The larger the caravan, the better.
We've already lost too much light.
Phelan looked to the setting sun.
We use what coin we have left to buy four horses and leave at dawn.
Three horses, Asher corrected with a wry smile. I'll take care of the fourth.
So that's it, then, Rayna announced eagerly, as if Asher's description of the pit had never been told.
We go to Lirion, pick up supplies and coin, travel south to nightfall, enter the pit, find the gem, and kill Valinus.
Asher groaned and dropped his face into his hand.
We are all going to die.
Chapter 6 The Spectacle of Dragons. Scrambling over the lip of the last rock, Gideon tried to ignore the pain in his hands and forearms. It had taken him almost an hour to navigate the floating boulder, but the climb had been made easier by the thick roots that rose from the ground and wrapped around the slab of rock, as if it had been ensnared by a giant octopus. A small spell had turned the palms and fingers of his hands into rough calluses, increasing his grip. He could have used other magic to levitate himself to the top of the boulder, but he enjoyed testing his physical limits. The surface of the boulder was covered in a thin layer of green moss, with sporadic patches of grass, which made it soft underfoot. The mage adjusted the staff on his back and walked towards the horizon, his eyes fixed on the magnificent landscape around him.
Incredible!
In the heart of the giant crater, known as Dragon's Reach, Gideon stood atop one of the dozen floating rocks that made up the home of the oldest creatures in Verda. The magical epicenter was surrounded by lush forestry and fields of green, an oasis in the middle of a mountainous desert. Beyond the tips of those mountains was the flat wastes and the great moor, a dense jungle that swallowed up the darkerkin city, Malaysai. Thankfully, that nightmarish place couldn't be seen from this paradise. The only sound came from the roar of the waterfall that cut through the heart of Dragon's Reach. The sun was beginning to touch the tops of the distant mountains, turning the sky into shades of burnt orange and lilac. The beautiful sunset wasn't enough to capture Gideon's imagination, however, for all around him were dozens of dragons flying and gliding over the trees and piercing the clouds. The mage had been watching them for weeks now, and still he couldn't take his eyes off them, entranced as he was.
Magnificent, aren't they?
Garanor was sat on the edge of the boulder, with his legs hanging over the side. The elf apparently had no fear of heights.
"No creature can match their grace," Gideon offered, taking a perch next to the elf. In truth, he had climbed the floating